the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at DaveDameshek.NFL.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 146 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck. S-H-E-K. Back in the seat to my immediate right, my main man from NFL.com, it's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me. Sorry to miss out on you on Monday.
Sure thing. I know. You had more important things to do, like the Halos were beginning their home schedule.
Yes, first, sir. Of
81 in Orange County. But we'll talk about that later, because look who it is seated in Studio 66, directly across from us. The man on the offensive line for the San Francisco 49ers, Joe Staley. What's the poop with you, fella?
Hey, the poop, I don't know, but it doesn't stink.
Okay, all right. Okay, listen. Joe, as you
walked in here,
you started out with, what are we talking about? And You know what? I'm going to let my hair down. You know what? It's not my show today. It's your show. What do you want to talk about? And that's where we're going.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot right now. What do we want to talk about?
I don't know.
What do you guys think about the basketball tournament?
I was just going to bring that up because You're a Central Michigan guy. You're a Michigan native. I thought it was fantastic. And I don't like that. I've gone on and on about I don't like March Madness. It's an overrated tournament. But boy, oh boy, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. Like the late, great Jerry Orbach at the end of Dirty Dancing says, that was an all-time game, right?
I mean, the whole entire tournament, I thought, it was exciting from start to finish. You had the 15 seed going to the Sweet 16 for the first time. And then those Final Four matchups in every single game. I'm actually kicking myself because I was thinking about going. And, usually the Final Four matchups aren't great games. And I was kind of anticipating that going in. And, I made a wrong call there.
Are you a Michigan guy?
Yeah. I am a Michigan fan. You know, I held a grudge for a long time against University of Michigan because they didn't recruit me, and I really wanted to go there. Because growing up, I was a huge, huge Michigan guy. But I've gotten over that, and now I don't really follow the football team as much. I'm still Central Michigan football, but definitely the basketball because, I grew up in the Fab Five. And, those guys, those glory days until they went down in the caught a smoke there for a little bit.
I feel like you're almost too young. You remember watching the Rose and Weber
and
those guys?
6, 7 years old. I mean, that's my peak interest in sports. That's when I got really into it. So those are my building years.
Do you remember the UNLV team a little bit earlier? Because we've talked to Jalen Rose on this show before, and I asked him if that UNLV team would have beaten the Fab Five. I know what he says. What would you say?
The Running Rebels you're talking about with
Larry Johnson,
Grandmama, and all that.
Greg
that
Anthony.
Was that was like right before, a little bit before. That was like when was that? 89, 90. And you know what? I'm just going to go with the Michigan guys because those Fab Five, they're just exciting. I think they brought a lot of excitement, and maybe they would have because Michigan didn't win the title that year. You know, they lost in the national championship
game. Here's the problem.
Freaking timeout.
I agree with you, but you know what's what's the strange thing about college basketball now is it's the only sport where this is true, where that Fab Five team or the Running Rebels or the Hoosiers of 87 or one of those teams would beat any team that's playing now. Not true. Like if the Niners of 2012 played, I don't know who from the eight played the Broncos of the 80s, you would whip them. True.
I agree. But at the same point, on the same subject, you have, I think the situation is you have players nowadays that are just bigger, faster, stronger. It's just the evolution of the athlete throughout the years. And, you see that as well in basketball. I mean, you have guys like LeBron James, granted, he didn't play college basketball. But those guys didn't exist back then.
All right, I want to talk about the Niners specifically, but
we're
now you're talking about
football then.
Player evaluation. But listen, not unless if you say I've talked too much football already today, we don't have to. We could talk about movies.
Let's talk about it.
All right, well, let me just ask you this, because this is a question I like to ask people, is what are Joe Staley's passions?
My passions?
What are your passions?
Why do you whisper it?
Because that's the way I feel like that's the only way to appropriately ask that question. What are your passions?
You know, my passions, outside of football, what I enjoy doing is I love being outside. I love spending time with my friends and family. I love golfing. Anything competitive, I really enjoy.
Connect Four?
You know, I'll play a good game of Connect Four, and I'll get incredibly competitive about it and probably ruin the whole night for everybody. But
you're that guy.
I'm that a-hole that nobody likes to invite to a game night. I mean, I like anything where I'm having a good time and smiles on my face. You know, I could... I'm one of those guys that never really says no to anything.
What about the,
unless it breaks the law?
The thing I wanted to ask you about with player evaluation. This is the thing that does it. How does this strike you? And no offense to you as an offensive lineman, but I feel like the one thing that nobody gets, no thing that the fans, and you know, I have watched football obsessively for three decades now. I have no actual ability to assess whether or not an offensive lineman is good. Mm-hmm. Is that weird for you? That is it strange? Do you feel under the radar in a way? Do you sense that nobody, that the one position where fans in general really have no idea if a guy is good or bad, except from what they're hearing, watching the broadcasters, nobody knows about that. Do you sense that?
I definitely agree with that. And, you know, as a lineman, it's frustrating because I think a lot of the times fans go off of, you know, to judge if a guy's good or not is stats. And there's no stats for an offensive lineman besides how many penalties you have or how many sacks you give up. So that's why you get noticed, is if you, you know, have a false start or a holding call, or if you give up a sack. And, you know, we tell people all the time, the pressure of playing that position is so great because you could play an absolute perfect game, dominate the guy you're going against 100% of the time, and have one play out of 70 that you give up that sack. And every single person in the country is going to say, you had a miserable game. You are the worst player.
Ain't that right? And that's really
that,
true.
You could do that one time. I mean, say you just do that every other week, not even every week. You could play a perfect game every single time besides one play, every other game, and you give up 8 sacks a year. That is awful. You're the worst player in the NFL. You're going to get replaced. On the flip side, the guy you're going against, gets 10 sacks a year, I mean, he could get his butt kicked in every single game. But if he has the stats of 10 sacks a year as an edge rusher, he's going to the Pro Bowl. It's frustrating, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I don't mean to bring you down. Yeah, it is one of those things that, right, it's exactly. People do not notice you unless you're doing something, unless you screw up. And like you say, it can be just one time a game. All right, I want to talk about the San Francisco 49ers. And a lot of people are picking you guys already. They've already decided you're the team to beat. But the 1A to that is the Seattle Seahawks. It's a fascinating thing all of a sudden that the two best teams, arguably at least, in the whole NFL are in the same division. How say you?
It's been coming for a while. You know, the Seahawks, especially last season, but over the years, this rivalry has really built up. I mean, ever since I've come in into the NFL, it's been getting progressively more heated. And, you know, the moves they made this offseason, we expect them to be very, very talented. And we made a lot of moves as well. It's going to be very fun. You know, presents a great challenge going up to their stadium with their fans, how loud it is there. You know, they're not going to lose many games at home. And so you really have to, you know, match that throughout the season. But at the same time, we know that the championships aren't won in the offseason. You know, you can make all the moves in the world, but you have to have a lot of things go right your season or during the season. You have to have, you know, limit injuries, teams coming together, chemistry, also have to play well. And so a lot of different factors that go into getting to the Super Bowl. And, you know, we're just looking forward to the process.
When the Seahawks go out and acquire a guy like Percy Harvin, what's your reaction? How do you find out, and what do you call your buddies? Do you say, oh, my gosh, you see what the Seahawks did, or what happens?
No, I mean, you hear basically how anybody else hears. I mean, it's such a, you know, with Twitter and the instant media feed, you hear it just like the fans do. And, you know, I'm always a little bit more interested when it's a team that in the division that makes a move. But, you know, at the same time, like I said, you know, the championships aren't won and lost during the off season. And, you know, we love adding, you know, talented players to the football team, but there's still a lot of work to do. And they would say the same thing about their team. You know, they're not, you know, claiming themselves champions because, you know, they signed so-and-so, but, you know, they have a lot of talent and he's a great player, and he's gonna add some of that offense. And so we're excited about the process.
Well, now you just
on the field.
Right, yeah, but now you just put Nnamdi on him, done and done. Now you're all set, right?
Yeah, I guess.
That's problem solved. Problem solved. That's it.
If the game was played on paper, but we have to go out there and execute.
Look at
the games.
Played on paper, you don't win in the off season. I see you going with cliches. I want to know about this, Staley.
But it's true, though. That, they're cliches, but they're cliches for a reason.
All right.
They are true.
What about this cliche? No one outside this locker room believes in us. Does Harbaugh throw that one around ever?
No. I think maybe his first year we did because, I mean, really nobody really believed in us. And we were a down franchise for a long time. But now we have the target on our back. We play like that.
We got a target on our back. Yeah. That's his new one. I got it. did he give a great inspirational speech before the Super Bowl?
No, he's never been in it. Where's my microphone?
There you go.
No, he's never been a great.
Not
to say great inspirational speech, but he doesn't give them.
I'm surprised. Wouldn't you think, Rank, that he's the sort of guy that's really in the locker room? Like, come on, guy! Big rah-rah guy.
I feel like he's built the team where we don't need the big, great inspirational speech. You know, we know the moment we practice for. And I think one of the great things about him that he's brought to this franchise is the culture of 100% football 100% of the time when you're in the building. And it's all about work and all about getting better. And, that goes from the Monday meetings to, game day. And we have a lot of professionals in that locker room. We have a lot of great veteran leaders. You guys got, Justin Smith and Patrick Willis. We got Colin, who's a great young leader for this football team. Frank, Vernon, guys like that. You don't need a huge inspirational speech from your head coach because the players love it.
All right, let's talk some of that day down there or the evening in New Orleans. Once the game gets going, then Michael Crab. Well, I guess let's jump right to the end there. Michael Crabtree was on the Rich Eisen podcast a couple weeks ago and said that he got bonked on the head and had no memory of what was going on out there. What was going on in that last drive? The thing that stands out to me is, once you guys get inside the 10,
Shaq said he got blinded by the hit.
Got blinded. What did I say?
No memory.
No memory, yes. He was blinded by that. Did you have any sense of that in the huddle? And in more general terms, once Gore makes that run down to on your block, once he turns the corner there up the left sideline and gets it inside the 10, did you anticipate we're not going to be looking at Crabtree the rest of the way? We're going to just keep grinding them because they have no answer. Once Nada went out of the game, you guys were gashing them. I don't have to tell you. You guys were drilling them play after play. Were you surprised that you went to the pass at all there?
To answer your first question with Crabtree, it was so fast paced down there those last three plays that we didn't really, I don't even know, we didn't have time to really recognize anything that was going on. So that's not brought to my attention, until
he didn't say like I'm blind.
He never said anything. No, he didn't.
You think that would come up?
I don't think it would. He'd be a competitor. But then at the same time with the play calling, they were running very consistently throughout the whole entire day. They were running a lot of cover zero down there within the 5 yard line. And we ran the first run play, and I kind of anticipated we were going to run the ball a little bit more, but with the way that they were running their defense as well, running up the middle or outside is tough against a cover zero all out blitz. It's a situation where somebody has to make a play, and we didn't make the play that we needed to there. I think as an offensive lineman, obviously I'd be remiss if I told you that I didn't want to run the ball because. And that's what we take pride on, and that's and we felt like we could have punched it in.
Did you guys what's happening in what's the vibe in that huddle? I mean, the Super Bowl, it's the biggest sporting event at least in the U.S. and you're this is what you've practiced for and lived for your whole life and all that. What's going on in the huddle? Are you guys saying to each other like, "This is it, guys. If we score here, we win the." Is that kind of vibe, or is it just very businesslike?
I mean, that because we had after that run, we had, I believe, a TV timeout or there was some stoppage in play. And I mean, we were saying like, we have 7 yards and we'll be Super Bowl champions. Mm-hmm. It was a lot. You try to keep it business as usual, but at the same time, this is for everything, those 7 yards. And but then on the same token, once the game got back going, there was no thought of that. There was no, oh my gosh, I better make my block here because if I don't, this is for the whole entire season and this is for the Super Bowl. It was about just doing my job. This is the play call and execute what I have to execute.
How long did it take you to get over the loss? Or are you even over it now?
I think, right now, you know, this next season's close. And it's going to feel weird, I think, until we get on that field again and really practice. But as far as dwelling on it and thinking about it, you know, I've moved on to the next season. And but it took a long time. And there was, you know, a good month there where that was basically all I thought about. You know, it was hard to get that out of your mind, just knowing how close. You know, this is the first time I cried in football after that game, you know, since when I was in high school, after we lost a first round playoff matchup. Broke my heart. And then the Super Bowl, you know, so it's definitely something that stings. But just talking to the guys as well, it was a situation that we're going to, you know, I think last year getting to the NFC Championship game, or 2 years ago getting to the NFC Championship game, we said all season, we need to get back to the Super Bowl. We know what kind of team we have. We need to get back to the Super Bowl. This year losing the Super Bowl, it's not, we need to get back to the Super Bowl. It's, we need to win the Super Bowl. And, the hunger that I saw coming out of the end of the last year is tenfold going into this season.
What then? As I guess the big news was the blackout, you know, in the third quarter. And we've talked to some Ravens, and they ate food. I don't know if you know this. They had some snacks. Did you have any snacks?
No snacks. No, but at halftime we actually were eating food because we anticipated the longer.
Did you hear Beyonce?
No, we heard the bass. We couldn't hear. I wish I could have seen her. Got a picture with her.
All right, last question for you. So you cried after that Super Bowl.
Yeah.
When was the time you had cried before that? Not football related. When did Joe Staley last cry? Shed a tear.
Oh boy.
Movie? Lady hurt
when you?
You
saw The Notebook.
I actually didn't cry in The Notebook.
How dare you?
I know, right?
You are made of stone.
I am. I have a cold heart. I can't remember. I'm an emotional guy, though.
Movies make you cry, though.
Sometimes they choke me up a little bit. They're not sappy movies, like
the Notebook.
That's not, I mean, maybe when she wakes up and like she recognizes who he is, and yeah, that stuff at the end. I don't know. Movies is like.
What about at the end of
Armageddon?
I don't
get like enthralled into it. I actually have a funny story, but we might not have time for that. It's a college story about my college quarterback.
I'd love to hear it. I'd love to hear your stories. Did you cry when what? Oh, I'm sorry. We got to go. I'm sorry, Sam. I'm being told behind the glass we have to go. When's the last time you threw up?
Last time I threw up. Probably drinking too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, tequila or something like
yeah,
that.
Me too. All right, that's where we end it then. That's where we end it. On that note, Joe Staley, listen, I like you. I like your other offensive linemen on the team. I've met a couple of them. They're swell fellas.
Yeah.
I hope this year at some point we can carve some pumpkins up there
in
49ers facilities to help bring in Halloween. That's down the
road. That's way down the road.
That's, we got to watch. Listen, you got to get
playing the other holidays.
You know what? Let's celebrate.
Cinco de Mayo. Let's do something for that.
This is where, look, I like this. Let's celebrate all the holidays together. How to celebrate the holidays with the San Francisco 49ers offensive line.
That's a great idea.
This is an idea. All right, SanFrancisco49ers.com, and you can watch the Joe Show. Are you still doing the Joe Show?
Yeah, doing the Joe Show. I did an episode last week.
Cool. So be on the lookout for that. It's great stuff. You're a swell fella, as everybody has said that you would be. And listen, go get them this year.
I appreciate it.
Go all the way. Hopefully we'll get together in New Jersey in early February.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right. Go get him, Joe.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Sure thing. There he goes, the great Joe Staley. He's bigger than you and I, Rank.
A little bit.
Yeah, he's a big fella. There he goes, out of Studio 66. Rank, you're going to be playing some video games with him in a little bit?
We're going to go play some Madden for the two-minute drill. That's going to start rolling out next week, too, so keep an eye out for those videos. We've got a couple of banked right now, and no spoilers or anything like that, but I'm doing pretty well against these guys.
Can't you name drop who you're playing?
I can name drop a couple. We got Ryan Matthews.
Okay.
Navarro Bowman.
All right.
Was here. And some other guys.
It'll be interesting to see which 49ers are better at Madden football. I haven't played video games. It's weird. It's a tough spot I'm in. I feel like if I ever got a video game thing now, that would officially end any sort of life that I have. I'm barely clinging to have any, you know, sense of living that, you know, most people have. If I had a video game thing, that would end it. You know, that would end any chances of that. But am I wrong? Am I missing out? Do I need to go? It looks to me. I feel like I'm being a snob by not getting one. But I feel like, you know, listen, are you ever going to really beat Sega NHL 93 with the one timer?
Tough.
That's the best game ever. Just because they look better doesn't mean that they're better. Or are they? What am I missing?
No, because the old Maddens had the ambulance going out on the field, which,
yeah,
was, a
right.
pretty, which
I remember
was a pretty
that.
Cool thing. And like you said, they look better.
The NFL probably wouldn't enjoy that one anymore.
No. You can't do that anymore. But, yeah, I mean, you really can't. I remember one of the more rudimentary baseball games.
Hey, look, the wide receiver's getting a CT scan. Go ahead.
You got a concussion test on the sideline. But I don't know if you remember Baseball Stars. It was one of the better games. It was fictional teams. They had forget what the name of the team that was the best. It was like the All-Stars or something, and their second baseman was named Pete, and their outfielder, their right fielder was named
Babe. Oh, yeah, I played that, yeah.
I think that was one of the most enjoyable baseball games there were, and I don't know.
It was cartoony looking, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I love that one.
It was hard to beat, and so, you know, you get that with a lot of the games that, like you said, even though that they're really crisp, and some people who are walking outside, and they look, and they see it on your flat screen, think that you're watching an actual game. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's better.
All right, let's talk about a couple of football-related matters. Joe Staley moves out, and Black Tie behind the glass. How'd you like Joe there?
Joe's great. I watched him a little bit on AM today. I've actually been in today since 6 a.m., so I was watching NFL AM. He was pretty good.
Was he being zany?
A little bit.
Was it zany on there?
Well, not too zany, but he was having fun. You can tell, like, a lot, because it's early over here in LA, so.
It's early everywhere.
Well, yeah. But, yeah, he was being fun, and they had a little dance segment with Jacoby Jones' dance partner from Dancing with the Stars.
Do you think he had more fun on that show than he had here?
He might have, because he danced around with, like I said, Jacoby Jones' partner, Nicole Zalomis, who's the host of NFL AM, and one image I would never unsee is him swinging around Nicole Zalomis. Around and around for like 10 seconds on air. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, they like dancing. They do a lot of dancing on that morning show.
They do.
Seems like they talk about dancing, about two-thirds of the time, somewhere in that range.
There's been more dancing references on there than it has been Dieter Brock on here.
Oh, yeah. Black Tie. Black Tie with the Dieter Brock drop out of nowhere. Well done, sir.
That's your first organic one.
That really was off the top.
That was good for you. You're getting better.
That wasn't your first, you know.
I see it coming for like 2 minutes ahead, 5 minutes ahead, where I'm going to plan it. That was really off the top.
You're growing as a competitor.
In the hip-hop world, they would call that a freestyle. Really off the top.
In the hip-hop, did you say in the hip-hop world we would call that? Is that what you just said?
We.
Like you're in the hip-hop world?
I don't recall if I said we.
I think you just said we, and I don't think you count. I don't think anyone actually in the hip-hop world is embracing you, somebody who's never produced anything.
Hey, that's not true. I had a couple of songs back in my younger days.
What?
I had two songs back home.
Oh, for crying
out
loud.
I was part of a group. Six rapper group.
Six rapper?
Yeah.
What was it called?
We were called. Let's not get into that.
I'm interested to know what it was
songs,
called. All right, what was it called?
The group.
Yes.
Yeah. Forget about the group.
That was the name
of your band. You just brought it up.
Well, it's not a band if it's hip hop. We don't call it bands.
Whatever.
It's called groups.
A group.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's move on from that.
You know, I do want to go back to something that he brought up, and he was saying that he's here at 6 in the morning. I come in early. I come in at 6 a.m. and from 6 to 9, I consider it the best part of the day because it's the only part of the day without Black Tie. And now he's been ruining that this week by being – it's terrible, you know, because I can send him an email, you know, at 7, and I know he's not going to harangue me for another 2 hours until, you know, he condescends to come in. But no, this morning I sent him an email and immediately got a reply.
It is one of the conundrums of life that it's great if you're actually up and around and once you're where you have to be and it's 6 a.m. That's a great feeling. It's the problem of waking up.
It's brutal.
Oh, yeah. It totally is. That first 30 minutes of being up, once I get over that hump, I'm fine.
I go on the Corolla podcast, and this is something we talked about a few weeks back. It's an interesting, you know, most of... The human body is remarkable, you know, all these things that your heart just keeps on bouncing, you know, over and over again rhythmically until it stops and then you die. But you get a good, you know, 42 to 93 years, somewhere in that range, before it gives out. The one thing that the body physiologically has no – what is the thing with your body not waking up? Shouldn't your body accommodate the need to wake up? It's like, what are you doing trying to open your eyes? Like, I don't feel well for the first 17 minutes of being awake until I drink coffee. And if I didn't drink coffee, I would feel lousy for the first 90 minutes. What gives there? What weird kind of mystery of life is this?
So you're saying human beings should be able to instantly wake up.
Your eyes should pop open and you should be ready to go.
Like
you have to wake
phone
up.
On. Just turn it on and you should be on. That's
right. Exactly. Like your cell phone. I invented, and people scoff at this idea, but I am sincere. I think that somebody should invent a caffeine IV. I think that there should be a thing that, like, you plug in before you go to sleep kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it could be a mister that, like, when your alarm clock goes off, it just sends caffeine mist into your face. And you wake up immediately, you see? Or if, like, the IV, it's time drip. Instead of dripping into the coffee pot, it drips straight into your vein. You see? While you're asleep, I have to wake up. My alarm is set for 6:15 a.m. The drip starts at 6:10 a.m. You understand what I'm getting at?
Look, it's percolating already.
It's already in your veins, and then you can't help but wake up 4 or 5 minutes later. Whoa, I'm ready for the day.
You know, that's
Are you serious?
I am serious.
That's actually the best way to nap. If you're going to take a nap, what they say to do is to pound a cup of coffee or a Red Bull,
mm-hmm.
and then immediately go lay down and go to sleep.
Because that
20 minutes before it kicks in, you sleep well, and then you wake up awake.
That's an interesting idea. I can't take naps. It's one of my crosses to bear in life. I've never been
That's
able
all.
To take a nap. I can't fall asleep on an airplane.
I've
naps, forget it. I used to do a morning show, and then, you know, I had to wake up at 4:30 in the a.m. Of course, everybody says, well, so you just go home and you take a nap. Not the Amishek. I'd be awake the whole time. It's a tough life. Let's talk about Emmanuel Sanders. He signs. He is a restricted free agent with the Pittsburgh Steelers. A significant piece, whether or not you consider him to be a great wide receiver, the Steelers are in a bit of a pickle here, because do they want to pay him $4 million? They needed a wide receiver 3 years ago. They drafted him out of SMU. Of course, Antonio Brown, the 6th-round pick, emerges as the more prominent target because Emmanuel Sanders has continually been hurt. But when he's on the field, he looks very good. Occasionally, he will drop some passes, but looks like a nice player. $4 million a year for a cash-strapped team, though, is difficult. The Patriots have now signed him, and the Steelers must match by this weekend or else they'll lose him. What do we think about it for the Patriots? I think that it's pretty easy to say this, that with the exception of a couple of those guys, I think they call it the X receiver in New England. It's what Brandon Lloyd was supposed to do and what Chad 85 was supposed to do. Both of them failed. So there is some history, short-term history, of those guys not doing especially well in that spot. But that being said, Tom Brady makes most wide receivers look pretty good in that offense, so I guess it's a fine move for them to make. From the Steelers' perspective, do they need to do that? Because really, if they lose him, you're talking about Antonio Brown. Heath Miller, remember, as a target, has the knee injury. We don't know if he'll be ready for the season. Plexico Burris and Jericho Cotchery, that might be the worst receiving core in the NFL. Rank, how say you?
That would be pretty bad.
That's it, right?
Yeah, it seems like the Steelers have to. The Steelers, I do put them along with those teams that just go out and seem to be able to replace guys. You know, I give Baltimore a pass. I give them a lot of credit because Baltimore always finds a way to go out and restock their team. The Steelers, I feel, are the same way. And Emmanuel Sanders doesn't really strike me as a guy that they must sign, because I feel like whoever the Steelers bring in, he'll be fine.
Next issue that's football related, Joe Flacco has been called a quote-unquote embarrassing choice by the grandson of Johnny U to play Johnny U in an upcoming movie. JC Unitas, why can't you just enjoy that you get to walk the streets with the last name Unitas? That's pretty good. What do you have to bellyache about? It's not like your last name's Green. Oh, are you related to the famous Greens? If your last name's Unitas, I think it's self-explanatory. That should be enough for you, fella. Don't bellyache to me about Joe Flacco playing him. But it does remind me,
he's not acting, though, right? He's just going to be the guy in the football scenes.
Yeah.
They're going to be using his throwing motion, kind of like
You should be flattered.
Because it was a one of the L.A. Avengers was the Adam Sandler's stunt double in the prison movie, The Longest Yard. So that's all it is.
What would you rather, Unitas? Would you rather have an actor who has the silly arm, you know, doesn't throw like a fella? That's going to diminish your grandfather's.
Robbins?
Come on. Wake up, J.C. Unitas. But it does remind me, as we come off of the basketball national championship, it's always bothered me. What fan base should be more bothered by the Nick Nolte picture? I can never think of the name of
Blue
it.
Chips.
Blue Chips. Blue Chips, where he's essentially being Bob Knight. Remember, in the first scene and then in the last scene of that picture, the Indiana Hoosiers are the team that they play, you know. And Bobby Hurley plays one of the Indiana Hoosiers.
Right.
Not a fictional team, you understand.
Right.
Matt Nover, who was on the Indiana Hoosiers, is on the fictional basketball team of Nick Nolte's. But then the Indiana Hoosiers include, they have Calbert Chaney and many of the stars of the early 90s from that real team. But Bobby Hurley's on it too, wearing his number 11, except in red. I thought, listen, I went to Indiana University. I've always been offended by seeing Bobby Hurley doing that. But should Duke fans be even more outraged?
Yeah, I don't know. I would put it down as something like Brett Favre going and playing for the Vikings. Seeing somebody turn coat like that, it would be offensive. Although,
but this had to do with a lot. Yeah, this had to do with Brett Favre wanted to extend his actual career. This is whimsy. Bobby Hurley, where's your honor, sir?
I do remember him talking about that too when the movie came out, saying like, "Oh, it was like a cool experience to go out and wear the traditional Indiana pants," and I'm like, dude, you went to Duke. It's not like you went to some small-time school and this was your chance to crack on the big time. I would be like, see, I would say if I was going to ever be like a famous actor, I would want to be one of those guys that I always want to represent my teams. Like Seinfeld, you know, he always talked about the Mets. Being that kind of guy, like I'd always talk about the Angels or the Lakers and insist that my character was a fan of those teams. So I don't get it. And I understand, you know, maybe it's a paycheck or whatever. I wouldn't have done it. If I was a Duke fan, it wouldn't have set very well with me. I wouldn't want to see Larry Johnson running around in a UC Santa Barbara jersey.
I continue to bang my head against the wall, and I feel like, you know what? I feel like, frankly, I'm losing my battle against these fashion-based decisions of people, and you see even athletes doing it, wearing ball caps of teams that they're not associated with just because it matches their shoes.
I hate that.
I don't care for it. I don't mind telling you, it's an ethical nightmare for our society in the 21st century. I've done my best to clean it up. I don't know that I can do it on my own.
Don't you hate, though, if you see somebody in a Pirates hat and you walk up to them and you're like, hey, who won the game tonight? The Pirates win? And the guy looks at you like you're a moron.
Oh,
like,
how would I know? Just, I wear it for fashion.
Yeah. Oh, no. I just like the hat. My name's Paul.
Hey, guess what? I love that Brewers Royal Blue hat, the old one that looks like a baseball glove, but is also an MB. I love that hat. Would I like to wear it? Sure. But am I from Milwaukee?
Nope.
No. Ergo, I can't wear the Brewers hat.
By the way, speaking of the Pirates, how many of those games did you get out to this weekend? Your Pirates are in a town?
I went to one. I know that's your big thing.
No,
I'm not
just
a Pirates
wondering.
Fan because I don't
I'm
watch them obsessively. They're a garbage team. What do you want me to do?
I was just curious to how many games you went out to this week.
All right. Listen, the Badland Buckos, the season has just begun. We have like 155 games left. We have plenty of time to watch.
How many out here?
All right.
Three.
That's right, only three. I'll get back to the banks of the Three Rivers and watch them. I'll cross the Clemente Bridge and walk into PNC Park. Never mind how I conduct myself as a sports fan. I think my statistics speak do all the talking for me. What I've done to see.
Unfortunately, yes, they do.
How dare you? All right, so let's get. I'm moving on from this, and let's move on now to the first installment of our draft diary with UCLA defensive lineman. Like I say, he's shooting up the charts. It's Dayton Jones. So what's happening, man?
How you doing? I'm excited. I'm feeling blessed.
Are you feeling blessed? Listen,
yes, sir.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves, you know? We're not done yet. We're almost at the finish line, but
almost
not
there.
Quite. All right. Are you going to be in New York City, first of all?
You know what? I haven't got the Radio City invite. I've been looking forward to it. You know, if I do, that's a dream come true. If not, I'm still celebrating my family, and I'm going to be ready to go.
So if they invite you, you would go?
Oh, yeah. If they invite me, I'm there.
you're not worried about what happens if, you know, things go the other way. You know, it seems, you know, we saw it famously with Aaron Rodgers. It looks embarrassing. Do you not?
I feel like it's embarrassing if you have an expectation of being like a top five pick, you know, but I just want to take it all in. The scenery, I've never been in New York before, and I'll just be happy to just get the experience of going, you know. I saw, you know, once, that's been on my bucket list forever. When I saw the movie The Blind Side, and I watched Michael walk across the stage, and I saw it from his view, and it's just been on my mind ever since then, and it's just been there. It's been one of my goals to reach.
Well,
I like that his draft perspective came from The Blind Side and not actually watching the draft.
That's an interesting point. All right, let's talk about this. Let's talk about etiquette when you get drafted, if you're not in radio, even if you are in Radio City Music Hall. This is something I'm sure you've seen watching it with other people. You can't hug your agent first, all right? You got to hug family, at least three family members before the first hug goes to the agent, okay?
Oh, most definitely. Family comes first, then my guy, my agent.
Okay.
Give him a fist pound. Don't go for the hug.
We don't even have to hug the agent. That's right. That's a fair point. Now, listen, this is a job. You understand. I know it's fun. You're playing football, but this is going to be a job. So like anything else, let's treat it like a job. And I think I have some questions I'd like to ask you that maybe that this will help the, you know, I'm sure there are a lot of personnel guys around the league listening to us right now. So let's do that right now. Have you ever watched this show? If you're a fan of movies, you must be familiar with Inside the Actor's Studio, right? With the bearded guy. You know that show?
Yeah.
Okay. At the end of that, he always asks a list of questions to his guests by French interviewer Bernard Pivot. So now I'm going to ask them to you. Let's see how you do. First question is, what is your favorite word?
I guess I always say, come on. That's my favorite word.
Come on?
Come on, man. Come on, son.
That's the wrong network. That's the wrong football talking people. That's what Keyshawn says. All right. That's fine. What's your least favorite word?
My least favorite word is quit, because I never quit. I'm always going.
I like that.
I just hate that word.
I like that. I like that. That's the kind of thing that these personnel guys are going to love to hear. What profession, other than your own, would you like to attempt?
Basketball,
of all the ones.
That's my next profession.
I like that. Okay. That'd be cool. I'd like to see you out there working on the low blocks.
What I used to be a point guard back in the day.
Did you really?
He's 6'4".
Yeah, I used to be a point guard.
What did you make of what do you think about what's going on there, as a matter of fact, over at UCLA in the hoops world?
Oh, man, you know, they have a lot of talented guys, you know, around on campus. You know, they just got rid of their head coach and re-signed a new one. Hopefully all goes well. Hopefully I can see them in the Final Four next year and maybe the national championship. That'd be great to watch.
Steve Alford is their coach, unfortunately, so that's not going to be happening.
Oh,
come on, son.
I'm sorry.
All right, here's the question that you hear all the time. What team do you hope to get drafted by?
The team I hope to get drafted by. Well, you know, growing up, I've always been an Indianapolis Colts fan.
Ah, that's interesting.
I created myself on Madden when I was a kid, as a Colt, but, you know, now it's more of a business aspect, and I'll love to play anywhere, to tell you the truth.
Last one for you before we let you go this week, then we'll check back in with you as you're starting to get your head right for drafting and all that. But let me ask you this one. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You are a great man. Yeah, you lived a great life. You lived the life that I wanted you to live, and you did everything the right way.
Excellent. Excellent. And we have just a couple more days until you are an NFL football player. It's exciting, like I say, to live it through you, to yap with you here. Best wishes. Stay on the straight and narrow for the next couple days. You know what I'm saying? For the next week or two. And then hopefully we'll hook up in Radio City Music Hall. If not, we'll get to watch you on TV. And you're going to be and we're going to watch you hugging at least three or four family members and then the fist bump for the agent.
Oh, you already know.
All right, perfect, perfect. All right, listen, Dayton Jones, we wish you the best, and we appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to yapping with you next week.
Thank you.
Damoshek, Damoshek, David, Damoshek.
There he goes, Dayton Jones. And Black Tie just whispered in my ear, I'll pull back the curtain there, this is what we talk about, Rank. And you know, it's an embarrassment for you and me now, because behind the glass isn't just Black Tie, but also the face of the NFL Network, Rich Eisen, is coming into this podcast studio in just a moment, and he has to hear Black Tie give us the business.
We're just hanging, just chilling.
Ham and Eggers. We're Ham and Eggers, and Black Tie's in here giving us the business. Hurry it up, guys. We have. I'd like to, it's 2 minutes you have, but I'd like to see it in a minute. Surprise me.
And now I'm putting on a headset to screw things up even worse.
Take that, Black Tie.
How about that?
You're not going to talk trash to Eisen, though, are you?
Hey, you guys win this round.
No, keep fighting a good fight. He outlawed Chris Law when Chris Law left.
Oh, wow.
Remember that? You made Law look
that.
Bad.
I remember that.
He's my latex salesman, and you made him look even worse.
Now, Rich, I think it takes great courage to do what you've done this week.
What is that?
Show your face. Show your face. Get out on the streets.
What does that mean?
Press on with this thing called life.
After the Wolverines?
It started for you
house
on Monday
money.
Night.
House money. It was house money.
I suppose. I guess that's true.
Come on, man. The last time we had all those freshmen play, banners came down. Program went in the toilet for 20 years. This is fantastic. This is great. You know how many times I watched games like Monday night's game between two programs who are flying above the rim, playing great, entertaining basketball, saying, I would love it if Michigan was one of those teams one day. And that was them. It was fantastic to watch.
I'm an Indiana Hoosiers guy, so
no,
that wasn't good.
I'm sorry. No, you got us in the regular season.
That's right.
Your coach was screaming at somebody on the Michigan staff, right?
That's right, yeah.
Your coach has got the swim move down perfectly when it's the handshake. He's got that thing down. But it was a great Indiana season, super Indiana season.
Speaking of Indiana, we were just talking to Dayton Jones about UCLA's basketball program. Steve Alford going, that seems to be one of the most puzzling moves in college basketball.
I'm inclined to say 6-1, half dozen of the other from Ben Howland to Steve Alford, but in fact, it seems like a little bit of a drop off. Well, At least Howland has gotten some teams to the has gotten a couple of teams to Final Fours.
Yeah, I think I tweeted out fire coach with 3 Final Fours to hire a guy 1 week removed from signing a 10-year deal to stay at his old school. There's nothing wrong with the NCAA right now.
It's real. Wow, listen. I mean,
nothing to see here. Go back to your homes.
Yes. This
That's essentially what happened at UCLA.
Guy with
3 Final Fours out. Let's now bring in the guy. I think, choice E? Choice F?
That was the pickle they were in that no one... And it's a strange world in which we live now that the Shaka Smarts of the world don't want the game now.
Right?
It's really a weird thing. I understand because the quick trigger everybody has now, but...
And I feel for Alford because across town, Dunk City...
I know, yeah.
...with the Maxim wife... is coming to Los Angeles.
Right.
And who do you think people in this town are going to pay attention to?
Where are the kids going to want to play?
I'm just saying. And Jim Mora Jr. is now the senior coach at UCLA.
Really? Not unlike the professional basketball in Los Angeles, right?
Yeah.
The UCLA should be the one that everybody's paying attention to, but of course USC next season's the one that's gonna get all the highlights.
I'm going to a Clipper game tonight.
Oh, are you?
I haven't been to the one in Staples, believe it or not.
Oh, wow. Really? Yeah, I've never been to a Clippers game.
The last Clipper game
there
I went to in Los Angeles was at the, speaking of USC, the Sports Arena.
Oh, wow.
When it was Lakers-Clippers in the sports arena.
I've advocated a long time ago.
Let me lay this on you. I'm sorry, by the way. I apologize.
No, it's cool.
He said to me, he was like giving you the wrap-up sign. And I said, it's okay. We're chatting. Chris Law just came in. My latex salesman just came in. We're talking to Denard at the top of the hour.
Ooh.
For our.
Wow.
Because, I mean, of all the times I got to get Denard in, you know.
Yes.
But when we booked him, we hoped we'd talk about a national championship. But neither here nor there. He said to me, I said, you don't have to wrap them up. We don't need the room for another 15 minutes. And he goes, no, I've been here since 6 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
And he wants to get out of here.
Unbelievable.
And at that point, you mentioned my... I wasn't going to come in and crash. You mentioned my name. I used that as an opportunity.
Of course.
I appreciate it. And I think I speak for Black Tie. That's okay, Mr. Eisen.
I think I made it. Rich calling me out on a podcast. I think I made it. You know what?
That's all right.
I admit, that's what happened.
All right, we'll get out of here, but really quickly, I want to say 2 things about the national championship game and get your thoughts, because, Rank, we didn't hear yours on the previous podcast this week. The two significant plays, I hate to be cynical about it because it was dynamite basketball, but the Trey Burke block had to make you crazy, huh?
Well, you know what? I always think of this when, you know, I think of two things at that point in time. Do I want to sound like Albert Breer or do I not?
And your back and forth on Twitter is one of the great delights.
Well, I mean, you know.
Buckeye versus Wolverine is great fun.
Because he can't help himself. Poor Albert. Okay. But I also think of Rod Woodson, Steeler great. And one of the many things I picked up with working with him on Total Access for like 7 years. He said that Chuck Knoll would always tell his team each week, this weekend, play better than the ref's ref. That there will always be a time where you're going to get screwed by a call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be fair, McGarry kicked the ball. There was no call. I mean, it was going both ways. It was dreadful both ways.
But the irony
NCAA,
is...
The NCAA must look at its officiating.
Ugh.
This past... Well, the whole story with Ed Rush and Pac-12 giving away trips to, like, sandals or whatever. Somebody's going to get Arizona's coach out of there. Joking or not, come on. Please.
I mean, really, the worst month in NCAA that I can think of.
The quick jump ball call or whatever the hell they call it in the NCAA, the simultaneous possession.
Oh, the possession arrow.
Because the possession arrow, that was the most retweeted thing I've had in weeks, was I just tweeted out the possession arrow, the NCAA's tuck rule.
Yes.
And that was... Because I hate that. I freaking hate that. Just jump it up. Let's compete here. Let's not have it like a flip of a coin.
Is that for time's sake? Is that really what it was about?
I don't know what it is.
I think if I remember correctly when they made that move, it was within our lives.
How many rules predate the three-point arc in the NCAA that are like that? Obviously, traveling will predate it. But I'm just saying, things that you could just change it, compete, jump it up. That was a brutal call in the Wichita State Louisville game.
Yep.
You know, you could go either way with a lot of Syracuse fans. We're going to talk about it on our podcast when Brockman calls in. He was bitching about, you know, the charge call at the end of the Michigan game. There was a brutal calling with Ohio State that allowed Ohio State to advance, I believe. I forget against whom in the tournament. Where
yeah, it was the...
Oh, lordy, lord. I forget which one that was. And Breer left the right. So I don't want to sit here and say, wow, that Burke call really hurt us. Even though that was clearly pinned against the backboard. I mean, clearly a beautiful block. Things could go either way.
You have to play better
than the refs.
You're being too kind because that was an outrage. The irony of that call is, though, of course, is bad calls. But the irony is that they were letting them play. Shane Bohannon was assaulting people on the floor. No calls. Trey Burke doesn't touch flesh.
A clean
and
block.
I know. Bohannon at the end of the game looked like Mark Madsen dancing underneath the basket. It was just like spastic everywhere, knocking things over.
Yeah.
Nothing. But I don't want to sit here, I'm bitching about the refs, complaining about the refs. Michigan did enough things, letting Luke Hancock go off. Oh. They did enough things at the end
that
of the game,
bad,
forgetting who to foul. Okay, who to foul?
Who to foul? When
even
to foul?
Even it would have been just even forget about you know you don't want to sit there and say, foul Jang. You could do that. You could just say foul the tallest guy out there. Just the tallest. Go for the tallest one out there. They didn't foul him. They took too much time to foul. The last minute and a half definitely wasn't Beeline's finest. But that said, seeing them on that national stage, part of a instant classic game, was just.
Yeah, the first half
just
especially
great.
Was wonderful. I'll say one thing to you, and then that will be our time. But do make sure you check out Rich Eisen's podcast this week. I got a little sneak preview because he was in Hawaii, as we can see, because he's tanned up.
Yeah.
And the philosophical conundrums that of social media, and because he's on a plane while his Wolverines are playing
Sports
their game
blackout.
And avoiding it, the blackout, and all those issues.
That's what you
we've
meant.
We've talked on and on about it here on this podcast.
Well, when he said sports blackout, I thought it was, you know, he's going to be bending the elbow. That's
no, that's what happened to Papa John.
Unless it's Cabernet. I don't know.
John Beilein, I think, I have to say, great coach, has built that program, obviously.
Awesome.
And the last minute was a screw-up. bigger screw up potentially at halftime. His speech saying, "Did you hear his
speech? You were in a great spot. I know."
He's talking. He's talking. He's getting him roused up, and then he says, "Hey, they have their kid who's got the hot hand." And what's the kid who didn't miss a shot?
We had one of our guys, Spike Albrecht.
Spike Albrecht, and he says, "And one of." Our guy, I can't talk about that because I'm going to jinx him, but now I've started to, but let's all go out and play well. And then he doesn't make, and then his streak is broken. I think Beilein may have put the pox on him.
They all can't sound like Pacino in the movies, you know what I mean? But I couldn't be happier. It was awesome. House money. Really
all
was right.
Well, say you have a better frame of mind. I'd be ruined for months. All right, tell Denard.
I'm still upset about the Greg Anthony charging call back in 91.
No, I thought you meant the Greg Anthony charge that he took from Gottlieb on the air.
That those refs in 1993 fouled out Calbert Chaney in a game that he hadn't fouled out all season. All of a sudden, he fouls out in the biggest game of the season. Well, please. But tell Denard Robinson, don't miss the golden opportunity. He's going to be in the NFL. Shoelace. This is a marketing gold mine. He should be Shoelace, period. Don't call him Denard. Don't even acknowledge it if he...
Well, it depends. I assume he's not going to lace him up in the NFL. I assume he's going to have to do that.
I mean, just the name
but
is
he
so
did
great.
That. He did that at the combine. He ran the 40 in laced-up shoes.
Oh, he did?
He did. Please, I'm the sitting there with I mean, I'm sitting there for 4 days. I'm waiting for one Michigan guy to show up, and it was Denard. There was no one else there. I was going to pay attention to every last detail at the combine when all I had to do was pay attention to one Michigan guy the entire week.
All right, Rich Eisen, for the sake of black tie, at least, we're gonna shut it down,
man.
Here.
He was just like, I've been here forever. You know,
I've been working for seven hours, man.
What he said was, "There's 2 minutes left. Surprise me and make it one."
Yeah,
and then I come in here and
pull
put
back
it,
the curtains, and
then,
totally.
And then, hey, just to show you, I gave up eating lunch. My lunch is sitting there. The Rich Special is sitting there, right there, untouched.
This all turned out great, though. This whole episode, as I said,
this is awesome.
Whatever, has been a black tie. It's too
That's
late.
Awesome. What's the alternative?
Can you understand how difficult it is? You have a producer who is supportive. We have to overcome every show the obstacle of a producer who hates the show. It's that's rough for us.
Yeah. Well, you got to go
Chris
between.
Law actually loves-
you got to go between somebody who exudes a little bit of, edge, attitude. And then competency. And then you've got my guy.
What if he doesn't have either?
Who's a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Who's like a, who when he first started out, it was like a puppy dog that you needed to calm down and break in with a newspaper. Right? And he's my latex salesman.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't give him up for anybody. But you have your guy
with his
peccadillos, and I've got mine.
All right. Well, listen, Rich
Eisen.
We have
our people.
Before I hate to end on
Am
a
I
sour
wrong?
Note.
Was that a sour note?
No.
Oh no.
I was gonna give you one last bit of bad news. I've told you this before, and I want to tell it to your face. The Rich Special, which they serve in the commissary, special in name only.
You don't like it?
It's bland. Let's spice it up with some sriracha or something.
Well, you could add whatever you wish.
I guess that's a fair point. Yeah, the onus is on me.
What
as
it
the
is
consumer,
I was
right.
told by one of the only nutritionists I ever. Allowed myself to see green leafy items and red sauce is an antioxidant haven for gentlemen of our advancing ages.
Mm-hmm.
And you add a little chicken for some protein.
I see.
Golden.
All
Fantastic.
Right. So it's a healthy choice is what we're saying.
Yeah, it is.
All right. On that note, Rich Eisen, a pleasure to see you
Same
here,
you.
And have a great time with Shoelace. And look, and Rich Eisen has the sun chips on the side. He lives.
Law, don't do that. Gotta live a little.
All right. So thanks to Rich Eisen, Dayton Jones, and Joe Staley. We'll be back for more Hooey and Applesauce later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.
Mr. Fancy Pants, the Flames need NFL news, and here's their chance. It's ATL around the league. Light a flame, boys. Pigskin's hot tonight. Burn, baby, burn.
Welcome back to another edition of the ATL Debate Club. My name is Dan Hansis, and as always, I'm joined by a man who has 6 times failed in his auditions for The Voice, Mark Sessler.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I have not even seen that show. I don't even know what you're talking about.
This is classic Sessler. He likes to thumb his nose at pop culture whenever possible. And then and I know what comes next. Now you tell me why you thumb your nose.
I literally have never heard of the show you're talking about.
The Voice?
Yeah.
It's like the number one show on TV.
Oh, so
it's
then
like
I'm
a singing competition.
I'm supposed to latch on to it and care about it because it's popular.
Well, perhaps you should know what it is. I'm not saying you need
why?
To be. And plus, you've auditioned for it six times, well, as I said at the top of the podcast.
That's a different angle to come from.
As fact.
In that case, I should have known what I was putting my efforts into.
Mark, things have gotten off to a little antagonistic start here, but how you doing today? So you got a haircut, which means that North Korea perhaps isn't scaring you as much.
Yeah, I got to admit, my concern over that situation has diminished.
Quickly abated. I feel the same way. I'm no longer taking it seriously. What's in the news today, Mark? Like, what's going on with you? I know you worked a very early shift at Around the League, 5 a.m. after you and I were at a watering hole past midnight. That seems a little irresponsible, but you made it here.
Well, we were out with our boss.
Yes.
So that's fine. And this morning...
Our boss is who?
Greg Rosenthal.
Yes.
NFL Around the League's editor, Greg Rosenthal.
Yes.
The morning got off to a brisk start. I walked in and NFL AM... you know, this is not something that's new for NFL AM, but they had Richard Sherman on.
Oh.
And, you know, you saw what happened with him. He was incorrectly quoted, he said, suggesting that half the league is hooked on Adderall.
Right. He said he was misquoted by a newspaper and
which essentially he was. I mean, you know what? Sherman was correct on this. But I guess my issue is I feel like the guy cannot get out of the news cycle.
Well, you know what's funny is that, and I agree with you, Sherman was a guest on the ATL Debate Club, and we had him in here, and we did ask him while he was here if, you know, if it's important to him to stay in the news cycle, and you know, he denied it, and he said, you know, that he's just kind of being himself, but at the same time, it's hard not to think that he's really gotten sucked in by this idea of being a football type celebrity beyond anything else. I mean, as you could see when Darrell Revis made the mistake, I guess it was about a month ago, of you know, telling Sherman through Twitter to pipe down. Sherman didn't waste any time getting in the mix, and you know, sometimes I wonder if things like this, if he says these things just because he knows it's going to create a backlash, then he can go back on these shows. He's just that type of player, and he's a great cornerback, but, I mean, it's a little tiresome, isn't it?
Let's talk about Revis for a second. We haven't really caught up with his situation on this show in a while.
Right.
I mean, you're a Jets fan. That's out there. People know that. How are you hoping this gets resolved?
Well, first of all, before we talk about that, I just want to say, Fireman Ed, if you are out there, because I believe Fireman Ed, he's in an underground fortified bunker. He's eating a lot of beans, and boxed water. What else would you have in a fortified underground bunker?
You'd have soap flakes, and you'd have remember space food?
Yeah.
Things like that that don't rot, they don't go stale. Although both those items I mentioned...
Yeah.
Sound like they potentially could go bad.
Would they have Frankenfooters down there? Do you remember Frankenfooters?
I do. That sounds like a really logical choice. You just crack that can open and
No, Frankenfooters, actually, it's incorrect. You do not crack a can. They were hot dogs.
See, when I try to say that I do know something about our society,
right,
I simply am wrong.
Frankenfooters are stuffed hot dogs with chili or cheese. It was an abomination of the 80s. It was almost like a crime against humanity. I don't think it's on the market anymore.
That doesn't sound to me like a top 10 food item, food stuff that you'd bring underground to a bunker.
Probably not. But getting back to your point, Fireman Ed, come back to us. Things are going to be okay. As for Darrell Revis, yes, as a Jets fan, it hurts to see how inevitable this all is at this point. I will say that if the trade's going to happen... that get that Tampa Bay Buccaneers 13th overall pick and let's move forward. And, you know, it's so easy for everyone to pile on the Jets at this time because they're such a big target that I think we're not going to give them enough credit, I feel like, if they do pull this off correctly. There were reports in the over the past month how, you know, the Jets were playing this poorly. But if they get the Bucs' first pick and then they get, you know, a Percy Harvin type deal where they get a third rounder next year and a seventh rounder this year in addition to the first pick, that's a great trade considering the options that they had, which were basically nil beyond the Bucs.
Well, I agree, because if the Jets realistically, and I like John Idzik, I think he's a sound thinker. He seems to be willing to take that team in a different place. If you get what you can for Revis, there aren't that many players that you can trade or a team would be willing to trade for multiple picks. And Revis is one of those guys that I think the situation actually fits for New York. I didn't feel this way a month ago, but they are in rebuild mode to some degree. And that doesn't mean that it's a five-year rebuild. But if they can get two number one picks, and one name that keeps bubbling up as a potential fit for the Jets is Tavon Austin, which I think would be very exciting, actually. Yeah. I mean, that would be a game-changing addition to that roster.
Yeah, the West Virginia wide receiver. Right now, around the league, the blog, we're doing a running series, because we're always in a different running series. The running series right now is draft questions, and we're going through each team and seeing what's the most pressing need, what's the biggest question facing these teams entering this month's draft. And as I do these draft questions, and I think you're having the same situation as well, Tavon Austin seems like such a good fit for so many teams because he's the type of player in the way offenses are run now with spread offenses and speed is king, that this guy could shred any defense. So it makes sense why he's gone from a fringe first rounder to someone that people are even speculating the Jets could take with the ninth pick or the 13th pick.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a piece how I thought that the Bengals, you know, he's not going to be around where they pick at 21, but they have like 10 picks. They could move up potentially, and that's not something that front office would do. But like, talk about a team that's stunk it up in the playoffs 2 years in a row because they're not imaginative on offense. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, as their only backfield threat, is a big bowl of vanilla ice cream.
Right.
I like Austin because you would only make someone like A.J. Green or the other weapons on any team you plug him into that much more dangerous because you've got to have one or two guys on Austin or paying attention to him all over the place. So it's like he could really change a team, and he'd be the guy that we're talking about a year from now is the reason a team went from, you know, middle of the pack to something no one could defend.
Yeah, and going back to the Jets, you know, he is the perfect fit for what they need on offense. For the past two or three years now, the Jets have been defined by this ground and pound nonsense. And if you put Austin in there, that changes the narrative immediately.
It does.
And, yes, I know you were saying in the newsroom yesterday that you were almost angry about the idea of Austin going to the Jets because they don't have a quarterback to get him the ball. And perhaps, I know, a lot of people are thinking Sanchez or whoever ends up as the quarterback can't get it done, but that's not a permanent situation. The Jets might very well end up having an impact quarterback next year, and then you have him with Austin. So I think if the Jets make that move, and they're in desperate need of a culture change right now, Austin is the type of guy that could change the temperature of the room.
Well, I was genuinely just jealous because as a Browns fan, I would love to have him on. I think that like Rob Chudzinski is a coach that would know how to use a player like that. And I always was concerned last year with the Jets coaching that they took a Tebow-type guy. They didn't figure out how to use him. Now, maybe there isn't a way to use Tebow, and they saw him in practice, and they said it ain't happening. But, you know, they have a new coaching staff in there on offense, at least, in terms of the coordinator. So we'll see. I would be excited for you, but it would mean another round of 500 or 600 Jets stories that we might have to not write otherwise.
Well, that's inevitable, basically. Speaking of your Browns, did a story late last night about your former team president, Mike Holmgren, who we heard rumors and reports that probably all linked back to Holmgren's agent planting them that, you know, he would be a good candidate for the Cowboys job when Jason Garrett was potentially in danger in January. And then there was that report that the Raiders had him in mind for some type of position. It was an oddly titled position. I can't remember what it was.
It didn't fit with anyone. And their structure they have now.
So then, you know, April 10th comes around, and Mike Holmgren takes a job as and I'll give the exact job title, KJR, Seattle Sports Radio Station. He takes a job with them, and he's a regular contributor and NFL expert. That's kind of a steep fall from a guy that was the team president of an NFL team. And while we're here, it's pretty telling that that was the guy running your franchise for 3 years, and now he's working at a radio station in Seattle.
I mean, it reminds me when Parcells went to, like, what was it, NFL Live, on when it was NBC's NFL Live for a year or something like that, ages ago. You knew it wasn't going to last. I think he wants to get back into football. But, you know, that station specifically, he drove people in Cleveland nuts because he would constantly, weekly, go on with that station while he was the Browns president. And with rumors circulating that he wanted to move back to Seattle, his wife wanted to move back to Seattle, and he gave very little time to Cleveland's radio stations, but would go on with the Seattle outfit week after week and, you know, buddy up with them. So this was in the mail for a while, potentially.
Yeah.
They know what they're getting.
You really don't know what the voice is.
Well, I watch, like, maybe an hour of TV a week. It was 2 hours this week, but
I'm going to go over some of the judges from the host, from the voice.
Okay.
R&B star Usher. Are you aware of his
Yes,
voice?
I have heard of him.
Okay. Can you name a song from Usher?
Well, Usher has had many songs. Why would I pick just one?
Okay. Shakira.
Yes, of course I know her. In fact, I tweeted at her from the NFL account one time.
Why is that?
On a follow Friday.
Really? That's a little interesting.
Listen, I am diverse when it comes to my pop culture influences.
How about Adam Levine?
No idea who that is.
Maroon 5?
Oh, wait. No, yeah. No, I do know who that is, okay. Actually. Yeah.
You bring up...
He's like a sort of a wiry, tattooed fellow.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's one way to put it. While we're talking about creepy tweets regarding your Shakira tweet, we have not talked about my meeting with the great Jenna Fischer.
You're right. And why that slipped through the cracks, because it was in that hazy period where I was gone for a week, you were gone.
Right.
And in the middle of all this, you're buddying up with Pam from The Office.
Yes, who's such a favorite of Mark and I's that our NFL.com inter-office fantasy team was called
Mark. Jenna Fischer.
Jenna Fischer, which is a little weird. And even beyond that, Mark and I wanted to potentially have Jenna Fischer do a guest post on Around the League. And Mark had promised me that he would contact Fischer and she would do a post by last September. I even had a contract that I wrote out and hung in Mark's cubicle so he would know not to give up the fight. That never happened.
Well, I sent a very engaging email to what I thought was her representation. Did not hear a peep back. Not a word.
Was the letter in like that where you cut letters out of a magazine and you paste them all together?
No, it was over
I believe that's called serial killer font.
Yeah, no, it was over font. The computer.
Real tie
it was
behind the glass.
It was a lot of class, very classy note. I just wanted to get her take on where we were in the football season.
Right.
And
big Cowboys fan.
Very big Cowboys. That's actually what triggered this, was that there was, in the middle of many tweets that she has about being a mom and The Office and other things, an angry series of Cowboys tweets after a loss.
And I'm a little hazy at this point because it was months ago, but it might have been even like expletive laden.
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak out of turn, but it was ugly. It was it sounded like she had an ugly night.
Well, I was lucky enough. My wife works in the industry. And I got to go to the Office wrap party following the final episode of their final season, which is airing right now on NBC, which also airs The Voice. But, you know, I was at this event and the whole cast was there and there was, you know, an open bar, which is nice. And there was food, which is good. And at the end of the night, as Jenna was going to her valet station, and this is starting to sound a little creepy, too. Mm. I, you know, crept up behind her. No, I walked behind her, and she was taking a picture with a fan, and I said, Jenna, you mind if I have a picture as well? And she went, of course. And then we got a picture
of course
together.
She minds.
Hey, listen, the picture, which we're going to – let's include the picture on the Damashek blog, Jenna Fischer and I, myself on Cloud 9 with a great actress. Maybe now that we've had a connection with her, you can now loop back in with your serial killer font and see if we can get something going.
What connection that you've built with her, I'm not sure how lasting that is.
Yeah. I wished her luck on her off-Broadway play, and I got a feeling that probably stuck with her a little bit.
You may know a little too much about her. I mean, you know, the initial – I'd love to hear her take on this because I'm sure it's a bit divergent from yours.
Pot, kettle, black. Alex Wilk, behind the glass today, as always.
Well, I wouldn't say always.
His hair looks really nicely styled today.
Thank you.
Alex, let's do some news.
Some news.
Yes.
Well, I've been engaged in USC-themed tweets that you have no interest in. Yeah. But no, I was intrigued.
Yeah, we cannot state any stronger that we don't care about
USC. Wait, you're
tweets.
Just reading. You're just sitting there on Twitter while we're doing our show?
No.
As the sound levels just go all over the place.
I won't confirm or deny whether or not I was reading you. Anyway, I really liked Hanzus's story on the ATL blog as well about the love boats returning to the Great Lakes, especially because I have I can get myself in trouble saying this, but I will anyway, small connection to that story in that Lake Minnetonka, the lake where this happened in 2005, the Vikings love boat story.
Yes.
Is
and
actually
if
where
you
my...
Don't... One second. And if you don't know about the Vikings love boat scandal, we ask you to consult Google because Roger Goodell has asked that we don't go any further than that. Go ahead.
Of course. Lake Minnetonka is actually where my aunt and uncle live, and I visited many times, and it's a favorite place of mine.
So was the love boat after the infamous scandal that rocked the Vikings franchise, was that boat just sitting on the dock?
You know, I couldn't tell which one from a distance was the actual love boat.
Yeah.
Sadly.
Well, the story is that the love boat, I guess, sat on Lake Minnetonka. Is that
yes.
It? For several years. And then it was sold to a man named Butch Parks, which is a great name.
Right.
And he is on the Iowa Great Lakes, which I didn't know existed until I did the story. And he has now put that boat on the Iowa Great Lakes, and he's offering family-friendly cruises aboard the love boat, which seems like one of the, I'm going to say, worst ideas ever.
It's really sort of a desperate plot. I'm not convinced that's his real name or that this is even a real person, because I also am not convinced that's a real geographical location.
Well, the Des Moines Register, unless that's a fake newspaper, and I'm almost positive it's not, says that the Iowa Great Lakes exist. And also that Butch Parks exists, and also that the love boat is on this body of water now. And he renamed the boat. You would think you would just call it love boat, right? And maybe give it some purple and yellow trim and just, you know, roll with it.
Yeah, I think you just go with what this situation is.
Yeah. He said that he toyed with the idea of naming the ship Love Tank, which just seems strange, or Mischievous, before deciding on Scandalous.
Yeah, I think there was another little fold here. Is he hidden a jersey inside the boat, or is it somewhere in there?
His
what
plan
was that?
Is to hide a Vikings jersey somewhere on the vessel.
Hide one?
Yeah, as a reminder or some type of, you know, reminder of what happened that night, which
right,
seems
let
like,
us not forget.
Yeah, it seems like something you would want everyone to forget about, but that's – we're talking Butch Parks here.
Yeah, it's good. He operates on a different hemisphere.
You know, it's a classic Butch Parks move. And, you know, so that's what's going on. If you want to do it, it's a 63-foot ship, 1994 Skipper liner. It's been fully restored. And as I noted in the post, we're hoping fully restored means fully power washed.
Yeah, I'll pass. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for the offer.
But you do have a family, a young family. This right. is, quote, family-friendly cruise.
It's not even on, like, the top 500 potential vacations I might plan with my family.
I like that it might be 501, though.
Might be.
What else is in the news, Alex Wilk?
I was intrigued by a series of tweets. See, it's not just USC tweets that I read.
Oh, good.
By Bucky Brooks of NFL.com, one
yes.
of our former scouts. He was there in Alabama for Eddie Lacy's private workout. He didn't do his pro day at the same time as the rest of Alabama. And he said, scouts are concerned. They love the fact that he ran fast for a size. 4.57 is good for a big back. But he literally shut it down during the positional workout. He was huffing and puffing and unable to finish drills.
Well, he had a hamstring injury, I believe.
That there's an injury.
Caused
pass,
him to yeah. sit out drills to this point. And I guess the speculation was that he was just kind of a little gassed because his conditioning wasn't right because he's been having to take it easy. I'm not that scared off by that. I mean, he's going to get in better shape, I'm sure, once he's fully healthy, or you have to at least assume that. On our speaking of our NFL draft questions, I did a post on the Denver Broncos, and if adding a big-time running back is the final piece in making their offense essentially unstoppable with the addition of Wes Welker with all those other weapons. And I said Eddie Lacy makes almost too much sense to be one of their first two picks.
Well, I actually had to do a draft piece myself, and I came to a similar conclusion because Willis McGahee could potentially be a post-draft cut.
Right.
He's not necessarily going to linger around. They don't have a whole lot else going on in that backfield that they can really – they have a bunch of guys. They don't have
the one
guy.
They have some depth, but they don't have that thumper that Eddie Lacy can be a big guy. You know, you get the feeling that the Broncos are looking for someone different than what they have, and Lacy fits the bill. Now, if he's going to be, you know, huffing and puffing and vomiting on the field all the time, I'm sure John Elway will be scared off, but let's assume that he's okay.
Yeah, let's assume that, and I think no one knows better than Elway what a really solid running back can do for a late 30-something quarterback looking to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, for sure. Terrell Davis. Hey, Wilk, what else do you have today?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call this news, but we did promise our listener – I'm going to keep that singular.
Carl.
Carl
in Trenton, New Jersey.
We did promise our listener that we were going to talk a little bit about Mad Men this week. I know you talked about it some on the Damashek podcast, but I feel like we have to keep our promises. This is a classy podcast, right?
It is. It's a very classy podcast. Mark and I are huge Mad Men fans. 2-hour premiere on Sunday. And, you know, it got us thinking while we were sitting in that watering hole last night. This idea of where does Mad Men stack up? Is Mad Men at the level where it's the best TV show ever? Where does it rank on that list? And what do you think about that, Mark?
Well, I guess right off the bat, you're making it clear to me that I'm not knowledgeable enough about television in general, especially contemporary television, to maybe even be involved in this conversation.
Because I think you're kind of a popular culture snob where you definitely pick your spots, so I don't think you're completely vacuous in terms of what's going on, but you have a very staunch view on what's low culture and what you're not going to go near.
I think I just don't have a lot of time. But yes, that also may be true. For me, when I think of – and it's so subjective, but for me, I have to go with Sopranos as my favorite show of all time. And I think Sopranos for me also – what it did on a cable network outside of being on one of the big broadcasting stations, it kind of lit a fuse where a station like AMC, the HBOs of the world, said, we can do this too. And I think it kind of rolled the carpet out for Mad Men to do what it did. I had the benefit of watching Sopranos literally all in a row in the course of 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think Matthew Weiner, who was a writer on the Sopranos, is the creator and chief writer of Mad Men. So obviously there is
a direct link to
that. That is connective tissue if there ever was. And so to me, I agree with you that even if I liked Mad Men better, I almost have to give – I keep on thinking Sopranos because Sopranos has been off the air long enough, and Sopranos is a name that I had to write on – roughly 400 posts of Jets copy this past year. But The Sopranos was the original. There's a book right now that I actually just started reading called The Revolution Was Televised by Alan Sepinwall. Mm-hmm. And it's all about these big shows that started rolling out. And it all started really – well, there were shows before Sopranos,
sure,
even on HBO. You know, Oz to name one, and I'm sure there are a couple others that are escaping me. But Sopranos raised the bar to what – TV can be. Mad Men to me is right underneath it, though. To me, that's my second favorite show. If I had to do a top three, it would probably be Sopranos. I'm still stuck on that Soprano thing. Sopranos, Mad Men, and then it's a kind of a jump ball between Breaking Bad and 6 Feet Under for me.
That's fair. I've seen plenty of Breaking Bad, and I think it's right up there. I just I've got one and two. It's hard for me to really put a third in there in that race.
So Mad Men's your two.
Oh, Mad Men is two, and I think Mad Men could become one.
Right.
But it's hard for me not to, you know, pay homage to the Sopranos, because I think that, again, it's like without that, I'm not sure, not only because of the creator link, but I think that it allowed Mad Men to become a much more viable option for a show, to, a station to take on.
Right.
Secondly, I think we're very conditioned to the tempo and the pace of Mad Men over the course of many seasons because of what Sopranos did.
Right. And there are other shows, like Wilkes, a big fan of Murder, She Wrote.
Yes.
But, you know, to
can't get enough of that show.
And Golden Girls. Don't forget Golden Girls.
We're talking one-hour dramas. So, you know, keep up, Wilk. But, yeah, so, I mean, let me ask you one more question about Mad Men.
Yeah.
You're sitting at a dinner table, and you could pick all the people in the world that you want, dead or alive, right? Let's say there are eight people at this table. Let's forget about the seven others, but I said one of them has to be a Mad Men character. It wouldn't be the real person. It would be the character from the show. Who is the Mad Men character that would be sitting at your table?
Well, maybe this is a boring answer, but I'm going to go Don Draper, because I feel like he's still the biggest mystery. The final pieces have not been revealed with that guy. Sterling's real close second. I think I'd want to sit next to him. He's fun. He also concerns me on many levels.
Well, the answer, you're wrong. Answer is Joan. You want Joan at the table. Sweet, luscious Joan.
Considering one of the others would be my wife, I don't want Joan there.
She's not at the table. Your wife's not at the table.
That's one of my eight people.
I will lay out the conditions of the table in a subsequent podcast. But Roger Sterling, the great raconteur, Roger Sterling.
Yes.
If I didn't have Joan, if Joan was birthing another of Roger's babies or was writing off a Vietnam husband and was unavailable for the dinner, I would go with Roger, a great raconteur.
Good. Well, then my pick of Don Draper is not busy at your dinner, which
Don
doesn't
Draper,
sound all that
by the
fun,
way, Don honest. Draper would be very – I understand he's another guy that changes the temperature of the room, but he might be in one of those Draper moods where he's just sucking down his old fashions and he's not making eye contact and he's thinking about some conquest later in the night. And he's not going to bring much to the table other than being much better looking than you.
And maybe some vomit.
So
maybe,
basically,
maybe if you
why did
premiere.
I answer this question?
What do you mean?
Why did I answer this, Wilk? Why did I invest 2.5 minutes of time answering a question that only
imagine
had
how our listener feels listening to you be ignored for 2.5 minutes. That's even worse.
I'm sticking with my answer. I'm very proud of it.
So you got Draper, I got Joan, and we both have kind of Roger Sterling on retainer.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. And Wilk, what about you?
I got to go Roger Sterling, too.
That's good. Yeah. That's good. We got all our bases covered, then.
What a team.
One person that is not on that list is Lane. So rest in peace. Too soon?
Really too soon.
He'd be boring, I think.
Although I guess that actually happened in the late 60s, so probably not too soon.
We kind of left Lane hanging a little bit. So
you've gone there, Dan.
I've gone there. Okay, that's it for the ATL Debate Club. Next week, we're going to try to have a guest. We haven't decided who it was. Actually, I have someone that I met at the office wrap party.
Yes.
That I'm going to try to get him in studio.
Really?
Yes, and he actually ties back to something we talked about earlier in the podcast. So I'm just going to tease
this
that
is like a guy that runs Grip, or is he like on air?
No, we're talking talent, bro.
All right, I cannot wait to find out who this is.
Yes. But until then, thanks for listening.
Thank you.